This is Ed Mazur, Chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Our speaker today was the Honorable Jim Durkin, the Republican House Leader in the state of Illinois. Jim addressed a number of very important issues. He talked about pensions. He talked about the Janus decision issued by the U.S. Supreme Court today. And he talked about monies that would come in from the Internet decision issued by the Supreme Court several weeks ago. He said he felt very confused being here at this time of the year because Illinois, for the first time in 15 years, has produced a bipartisan budget. In many ways, he said this was a very interesting year in the Illinois legislature. The state education system has been righted, funding for the first time. The four leaders and the governor all sat down and produced an equitable funding formula. He talked about growing bipartisanship. And then he looked at some of the questions coming up in the elections in November. For example, he talked about the state income tax proposed by the Democrat J.B. Pritzker. He said J.B. does not have the courage to tell us what the rates will be. Then he said we need to fix property tax situation in Illinois. Illinois' property taxes are almost two times the national average. With that in mind, he announced that today he, Jim Durkin, had introduced House Bill 5924, which will sunset the property tax system in Illinois in 2019. What this bill will do, it will force the legislature to address a deadline, result hopefully in compromise and real results. He said the minority party as well as the majority party must be involved in any decision making in the state of Illinois. He predicts a very close election this fall in the state of Illinois.
Hey, it's great to be here to see everybody. Let me just first say that it's a true honor to sit at a table with one of the finest basketball players that I watched in my day, Larue Martin, Loyola Ramblers. First round pick for the Portland Trailblazers. Now, Larue, we have something in common. I did play basketball on the court at Loyola. I tried out in 1979, and I got cut. I don't know if you got cut that first year. No, I did. So anyway, that's as close as we get. So, folks, it's June. It's the summer. And I got to tell you, I feel out of place and very confused. Why? Because I am in Chicago, and I'm sleeping in my suburban home. Now, to my colleagues from the House, I see I have four of my members from the caucus here. Thanks a lot for the other 46 who didn't bother to show up. But anyway, so Reich and Winger and Worley and the rest of you guys, when the committee assignments come up next year, know that this goes into the consideration for appointments, okay? We call that the gold star rule, Steve Reich. Anyway. But how about that, folks? Does this sound familiar? And for everybody who works down at Springfield, my colleagues, lobbyist, staffers, we're here in June, and we don't have to worry about a budget. But I tell you what, folks, it gets even better. Now, for the past 3 weeks, I've had this very vivid, repeating, recurring dream, or it could be considered a nightmare. And here it is. I'm somewhere in Springfield. I'm not sure where. But I hear this faint voice of Rod Serling uttering the following. The House will convene in 15 minutes. The House will convene in 15 minutes. In my world, that's pretty chilling. And anyway, all I'm saying is it's good to be back here. And you know what? It's great to be in Saputo's to have lunch with you today. And I forget. See, I'm still stuck. I am stuck in Springfield. But thank you and appreciate Maggiano's opening up their doors for us today. But it's an honor to speak here before the City Club. And I must not be saying things too crazy because you continue to invite me back. So, but at least we'll see how today goes. So we'll see if we get an invitation. I have a lot of friends here, and it's good to see them, and I guess it's because I buy a lot of tables, and so they get their free lunch. So that's also part of it, too. But I'm also pleased to say that my brothers are here. I've got a large family, and we're very close. And again, my brothers are here, but they bought their table. So they're over. My brother Kevin bought the table. Thank you, Kevin. But they're all over in the left, and I think if you look at them, you'll... We all look alike, so it's pretty easy to distinguish. So... But I will tell you this, that it has been quite a... Is that Kevin? Brother Ken, it's good to see you. So, folks, it has been an incredible ride this past year. In last September, when I was here, I spoke before all of you to talk about something unique that happened in Springfield. Something bizarre happened last summer. As the state's education system was about to crumble before our eyes, as the funding of all K-12 education was in doubt, and the deadline of schools starting on time loomed large, the Democrat leaders invited the Republicans to the negotiating table in an effort to solve our state's inequitable school funding system, the worst in the nation. During my tenure as leader, it was honestly the first time where the four leaders and the governor sat at the same table and in good faith negotiated a compromise on an issue so important to our state and particularly the children of Illinois. What we came up with was a new school funding formula that equitably and adequately funded all schools across the state and increased funding for schools from K-12. That means that every student in every school district came out as a winner, whether it was a Republican or Democrat district. And that was a great accomplishment. Deadline, compromise, real results. It's how we're able to get things done. And upon returning to Springfield last January, I sought to keep that same bipartisan working together mentality that got everyone in the state a win on education funding. I have always said over and over again at the City Club, I make this comment at the swearing-in ceremony, I say it on the floor all the time, and it's true, and I will continue to say that. That if the members, I believe that if all members of the General Assembly, Republican and Democrats, respect the priorities and principles of colleagues on the other side of the aisle, we can accomplish and solve almost every problem that troubles the state of Illinois. So my message to the House and Senate Democrats, it's very simple. Work with us, the House Republicans, and we can accomplish our respective goals. We need to do this more often. We are better off as a body, and we are better off as a state when the majority party engages the Republicans on issues that are important to all of us. With the fiscal condition of our state deteriorating, I knew that we needed to work together to craft a bipartisan budget and one that was on time. I knew it. The other legislative leaders knew it. The governor knew it. Members of the General Assembly knew it. And the taxpayers knew it as well. So as we approach the month of May, with the deadline of the end of the fiscal year staring at us in the eye and no budget in sight, I began the work to set up a process for the important criteria that needed to be met for the development of a budget. First was getting everyone together in the same room to talk like adults. And I say that, and I'm not kidding. The meetings that we have amongst the four legislative leaders can be a bit peculiar and at times a bit surreal. But this is a time for us to speak as adults, and we did. Currently, with Governor Rauner, Senator Brady, and myself, we have about a 12-foot height advantage over the Democrat leaders. 12 feet. But unfortunately, we are not playing basketball or volleyball. But hold on, just think about it and paint that mental picture of a match with us and the Democrat leaders. I think it's pretty funny. So, but let me just say, guess what team will be wearing the 1970s short shorts and the knee-high white tube socks? It won't be ours. All right, you guys get it? It's supposed to be a joke. So I mean, just picture it in your head, okay, the high knee socks. All right, not my team. All right, that didn't go over as well as I thought. Anyway, think about it. It will get better as the day goes on. So anyway, my focus and my caucus's focus, especially Representative Keith Wheeler, who's here, who just came in. Keith, thank you for joining us. Was to recognize a revenue estimate for the FY19 tax receipts, which the Democrats have not done in years. Seriously, how can you appropriate responsibly when you do not know how much money you have to spend? That is one of the biggest reasons our state has been in such fiscal distress throughout the last few decades, never mind that it is the requirement of the law of Illinois. But putting pressure on the legislature and the leaders to get a budget passed, we started to see things move in motion. We started to see that mentality from last summer come back into play, where the leaders were back at the table negotiating in good faith to get the best possible deal for taxpayers. Hard to believe. And on June 1st, the General Assembly left Springfield, passing his first bipartisan balanced budget in 15 years. 15 years, folks, a negotiated bipartisan balanced budget. I never thought I'd see the day, I'm honest with you. So, a budget that funds K-12 in higher ed, creates new scholarship programs for those in need, protects our most vulnerable, and most importantly, we did this with no new taxes. Because we negotiated, we compromised, and because the Democrats allowed Republicans to participate in a process. Deadline, compromise, real results. Again, it's how we are able to get things done. This is progress, but it's not time to take the victory lap. We've accomplished two big things recently, and that's a new education funding formula, which I've talked about, and also this budget, in which we have, which the governor signed a few weeks ago. But there's a lot much more to be done in Illinois. It needs to be done as soon as possible. You've read what the credit agencies have said, that yes, you have a budget, but there more needs to be done. So we all hear the horror stories about Illinois. Taxes are too high, causing people to flee Illinois for better climates, both business and temperature. 33,000 people left Illinois last year, and we are now behind Pennsylvania in population. That exodus hurts our economy and our government. And if we don't turn this around, we could lose up to two congressional seats next census period. That's just right around the corner. But think about that. It's not like having more politicians in a state like Illinois is necessarily a good thing. But in 1952, and I think some of you were around then, Steve, were you here at that time? Is that when you passed the bar? I think it was Steve Reich. He's part of the youth movement that we brought into Springfield in this last cycle. But in 1952, Illinois had 26 congressional seats, and we could be down to 16 in 2022. So it is time to keep pressure on the legislative leaders and the General Assembly to get more critical reform measures passed to move Illinois forward. Now, currently, the Democrat gubernatorial nominee is seriously talking about raising taxes. How can anyone in Illinois want to do this to our taxpayers, our citizens, who are seeing their pockets robbed on a monthly basis? I find this hard to believe, but that nominee refuses to talk about what rates he wants to raise on Illinois taxpayers, everybody in this room, everybody out in the suburbs, everybody in the city of Chicago, no matter what your income level is. And then he wants to change the tax code and make it a progressive tax. But he doesn't have the courage to be able to tell us what the rates are going to be. That's not leadership. So to me, the biggest priority right now, apart from our income tax, is fixing our broken property tax system in Illinois. All right, that's one. That's good. That's progress. Okay. That's two. Okay. A recent report from Adam Data Solutions shows that we have the second highest property taxes in the nation. I think everybody knows that. According to Smart Asset, the statewide average effective tax rate in Illinois is 2.32%, which is almost double than the national average. And not only are taxes too high, but they are also horribly flawed and just plain unfair. Now, over the past few months, we learned that the property tax system in Cook County is so unfair that you pay more if your house is worth less, depending on where you live, and particularly in minority communities. But this problem goes beyond Cook County. The Collar Counties in DuPage, Kane, Lake, and Will have the same problems and have some of the highest property taxes in the state of Illinois. Unacceptable. And now that bipartisanship in Illinois has a chance to work again, we must come together quickly and diligently find a solution to this problem. More than just lip service. More than just passing a bill knowing it's going to die in the Senate or in the House. A problem with our property taxes, and it's bankrupting Illinois taxpayers, crushing home value, and stifling job growth. Again, deadline, compromise, real results. That is how we have success in getting things done in Illinois. Well, within the last half hour, I have introduced legislation, House Bill 5924, to create a deadline to start the process of fixing our broken property tax system, much like we did for school funding and the budget. We are going through that legislation to sunset the Illinois statewide property tax code July 1st, 2019. And if we don't do anything, property taxes will go away. Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Doesn't it? Yeah. For those of you not familiar with Springfield, there is an often used, probably too often, mechanism called a sunset to automatically repeal a provision of law. This forces the General Assembly and stakeholders to review laws periodically to ensure they are working properly or risk repeal. Over the years, the General Assembly has put sunsets on things like doctor's licensure, the standard deduction for income taxes, the sale of lottery tickets online, all for the sake of periodic review to make sure the system is working. I can tell you now that the property tax system in Illinois is a failure, an abject failure, plain and simple, and it's time to start over. By setting a firm deadline for the General Assembly, it will force the legislature to come together in a bipartisan manner to find a compromise solution that will remedy this crisis and help bring Illinois back. Deadline, compromise, real results. That's how we get things done. Put pressure on the legislature. Give them a hard deadline. Mr. Speaker and Mr. President, allow this bill to pass, and it'll force real change within our property tax system for the first time in many, many years. So with that, I want to thank you for this opportunity, but I want to make one more statement, and I know that she made a brief statement, but I have to constantly, and I do this on a regular basis, I want to thank Representative Patty Bellock for the service that she has done for the people of DuPage County and also for the people of state of Illinois. All of us will miss Patty dearly. What she has done to the budget, but mainly to our Medicaid system, is absolutely amazing. And Patty has worked so hard is that she has become a national expert on Medicaid reform. And Patty, I want to thank you because you've done so much, just your recommendations. You don't do it looking for the praise, but I have to tell you that, yes, you're very modest, but I don't know where we'd be without you. So thank you for everything you've done, Patty, and God bless you. And whatever the next chapter in your life calls for, I'm sure it'll be great. So, Patty, thank you for everything. So with that, folks, I can't say enough about how important it is to engage the minority party on issues. And I've given you two of the biggest issues that we've confronted in such a long time. And that is education funding and also trying to prepare a budget. And we got it done. We got it done because at that point, Democrats opened a door for us. But, you know, as I said, we got to do this more often. There's plenty of material that we can use against each other in the campaigns. We need to put Illinois back on track. I wish we can get better grades from the rating agencies. They said the budget's a good start, but there's a lot more has to be done with our property taxes and our pension systems. Those cannot be addressed. We have stuck our head in the sand too long on those issues. So my first measure was to introduce that legislation today to say, let's set that deadline to get it done. And unless we do that, we will never accomplish change within our property tax system, which people and our businesses and our employers have been desperately seeking for decades. So with that, thank you, and I'm prepared to answer questions as long as I feel that they're good questions. So.
Okay, so we have time for some questions. If you fill out those blue forms, just hold up your question. Members of our staff will circulate and pick them up. And while we're doing that, Jim, you mentioned pensions at the very end. What do you see happening? Yesterday, we had a discussion up here with Lawrence Massal from the Civic Federation, two reporters, Juan Perez from the Tribune and Tina Sofandelis from the Sun-Times. And they talked about pensions from their perspective.
What do you see coming down the road in the area of pensions?
Quite frankly, nothing. Until there's a change in leadership in the House, within the House of Representatives, we're not going to see a real change in our pension system. Let me give you some information. I give credit to President John Cullerton for 2 years ago passing a bill based on his what he calls a consideration model, which passed through the Senate about a year and a half ago. I took that legislation and I took over leadership of it, and I have 26 Republican co-sponsors on that bill. And what that means is that I have the votes ready on the Republican side of the aisle to pass that legislation. What we often have on very tough bills that we know are ones which have to be done in a collaborative manner, we call it a structured roll call. And that's exactly the amount of votes that I would need to put on a vote to pass John Cullerton's pension reform bill. But there's one person holding it up. That's Speaker Madigan. The governor has said he would sign that bill. Leader Bill Brady has already signed off on it. President Cullerton has signed off on it. There's one person missing. So when I said nothing's going to happen, nothing's going to happen until there's a change in leadership in the House of Representatives.
Okay, thank you.
Was that clear?
Absolutely. Okay. Well, yesterday we reached the conclusion that no matter who is elected governor, there won't be any changes until, as you've talked about, there's movement in that direction. Okay, this is from the state director of the AARP, Bob Gallo. First of all, he says, on the budget, thank you very much. Bob's sitting over there. Now for the question. Considering the excessive rates currently charged to consumers by alternative energy suppliers, as evidenced by numerous lawsuits against them, why did the legislation, SB 1531, meant to provide transparency on those rates fail to pass on May 31st, or as of May 31st? And will you work to pass the bill this year?
Well, it depends on how I voted. I don't have a good answer. I'll take a look at it, but I think that most of us in my caucus, that when we hear transparency, we front and center on that. But I'll be honest with you, I'm not sure. I'd be glad to talk to you offline, call my office, and I can give you an idea. But I, quite frankly, the month of May was spent on the second floor running between the governor's office and also the speaker's office and my office. So things got a little bit haggard. But I don't have a good answer. But, Bob, please follow up with me.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. The United States Supreme Court issued a very important decision this morning on the so-called Janus case. And this question is from Victor Chang. Victor, where are you?
Right here.
Okay, over there. Victor's question deals with that Supreme Court ruling. What effect will it have on the state of Illinois? We could expand that. What effect does that ruling have for Mr. Rauner, and what effect does it have for the Republican Party?
Well, politically, this is I consider it a good day for the governor. The issue regarding Janus and the compulsory dues from public employees who don't believe in the politics or the way in which their unions have been using their dues money is something that's been around for a long time. So the governor's been at this for a number of years, and I congratulate him. This is a good day for him. I consider this opinion not a great opinion for public employee unions, but more importantly, it's a good opinion for public employees, giving them the choice to make a determination of whether or not they feel that their First Amendment rights are being respected with respect to the compulsory dues that are taken out of their paychecks that are going to more than just collective bargaining. They are going into campaigns, and that money, which is public-funded salaries and also money that is the dues are public-funded, and we know where that money is going. 95% is going into Democrat campaigns. So I know many people who are in unions, public sector unions, who are Republicans, who do not agree and subscribe to the way in which those monies are spent. So giving them a choice to make a decision of whether or not they want to participate in this process, I think, is fair. It's responsible. I don't know how this thing's going to play out over the next 2 months, but it's something that is going to have a traumatic and, I think, a very profound effect in the upcoming years on the political scale. And you know that the largest contributors in these campaigns come from the public sector, from the teachers union, from AFSCME, SEIU, the whole list of them. So, but again, I think it's too soon to see whether or not it's going to have any type of implication on this November's election, but it does clearly send a message out to public employees that people like myself and the governor, that we believe that you should have a choice on whether or not you should be forced to make compulsory dues to the union that you are part of. I think that that's right, it's responsible, and I believe that the opinion that was rendered today is founded on good principles.
Okay, thank you. This is from City Club member Dr. Yerkes. Doc, where are you? Back there, thank you. We noticed that there was some division in the Republican Party in the vote earlier this year. So his question is, how are we going to unite the Republican Party?
Boy, that's a softball. Holy cow. All right, here's what's at stake, and this is what I want. As we went through this primary, and we know what happened, there was division, obviously, between the governor and also his opponent. I just hope that those who did not support the governor understand what is at stake next November. It's not only control in the House of Representatives. I hope that we can win enough seats, and heaven forbid we should win the majority. But what's the most important, what I believe, the thing that comes out of this election in November is the ability to have a seat at the table on drawing the legislative maps. So I know people are unhappy. They're mad out of principle because the governor has made decisions that they don't agree on, whether it's on HB 40 or other things. But at the end of the day, I would say most of those men and women who supported the governor's opponent in the primary agree with the governor on 99% of the issues, on the fiscal issues of the state. But to take I'm going to take a principled position and I'm going to abstain or I'm going to vote for a third party is cutting off your nose to spite your face, because then having a map that is going to be drawn by possibly a Democrat governor and the two Democrat legislative leaders is not going to bode well for Illinois, and it's going to be a continuation of the status quo. So my recommendation to those who have had problems with the governor and did not support him in the primary, understand what's at stake. 10 years of control in Springfield, having the ability to have a seat at the table or even have some influence on drawing the legislative maps, where Republicans will have a fighting chance and where they won't have to have these ridiculous districts that we've seen over the years. And I give this one example because not only do we write the House and Senate boundary lines, but we also write the congressional lines. 2 years ago, I was in Danville, literally on the line, state line of Indiana. And up pulls John Shimkus. John's a congressman. He's an old friend of mine. And I'm like, John, what the hell are you doing here? He goes, Jim, this is part of my district. And I'm like, John, you live in Collinsville. He goes, yeah, look what happened, Jim. That's a great byproduct of what this map-making process is. It's not fair. It's not right. It's irresponsible. I know the Supreme Court made a decision, but they punted it back to the courts. But what's at stake is going to be the next 10 years of the legislature. So those who they need to get past the problems that they had with certain things that the governor has done, because there's more at stake at this election than people think, and the ability to have influence and a seat at the table on the next go-around with the redistricting process is more important than anything.
Okay. Thank you very much, Doctor. That was a good question. So that was a softball question. We'll give you a little more of a curveball here. This is from Larry Massal.
There you go.
St. Bernadette Grammar School. Okay, Larry. Here's his question. Since Illinois property taxes fund Illinois' 6,978 local units of government, more than two times any other state, what are the plans to consolidate, especially since no longer federally deductible?
Okay. It's very simple. We need a bill to be called. We don't get bills called in the House because of what local governments do for many of the political interests within the state of Illinois. Many of these local governments are where campaign workers are taken from and where fees and services go to professionals. There is definitely a lack of interest on behalf of the majority party to do significant and substantive reform
to our local governments with respect to consolidation. It's ridiculous. It's beyond pulling a tooth just to get something done when Dan Cronin did his bill a couple years ago. But Evelyn Sanguinetti, I know, has been working on it, but to get the interests of the Democrat leadership, it's just not happening. So, again, elections have consequences. Re-elect Governor Rauner, and if we are able to take the majority, we will pass bills that are responsible, and we will get rid of these duplicative forms of government, whether it's the coterminous townships that we see throughout Cook County and throughout the state of Illinois. But Lawrence, that's a good question, but it comes down to numbers and about who has control.
Okay, thank you. This is the family question, Jim, but I can't read one of your brother's writings. What do you think this says here?
Bird Caper?
Caper. You could tell us about the Bird Caper. Followed up by, who is your favorite and least favorite brother? It's a family affair.
You know, I have seven brothers, and they're all very colorful. They've all had really interesting careers, and they also sometimes can have a lot of fun. So in second grade, when I had first communion, my parents were kind enough to get me a canary. It was the sweetest little fellow. His name was Seamus. And I woke up every day listening and looking to Seamus, and it just made my day. One day, out of nowhere, I come back from school, and poor Seamus is dead. I know. It was a very sad moment. So we had a proper burial service in my backyard, and I made sure Seamus had put his affairs together, and that he we said goodbye to him. So as time went on, I was able to find out through some good gumshoe in third grade, investigative work, that one of my brothers took Seamus and placed him in the freezer at my parents' house and sprinkled water on him. So. Right. Now, I have to think, if somebody here who's a good ethics lawyer, of whether or not this is an in re himmel obligation that I have to report. So I will just say this, that when I talked about the nightmares and the voices I hear in the background with Rod Serling talking about the House will convene, I also hear the little chirp of Seamus. And there's no way in God I'm going to answer that second question, so.
We've never had a Seamus program before, but, you know. This is a really good question, too. This is from Alan Pam with the Asian GOP Coalition. Alan, where are you? There you are. Okay. Will Chicago and Illinois taxpayers foot the enormous bill that will result from the CPS sexual harassment scandal? How can students be protected in the future? And we could even expand that statewide, because probably Chicago is not unique in this, but...
Well, sure, there's going to be plenty of lawsuits that are going to come out of this against the Chicago Public Schools. That's a given. What Chicago has to do, look, we can pass all the bills we want, and I know there's legislation that's pending, but schools like Chicago and everyone else, it's real simple. Do the background checks. Do some due diligence. Before you're going to put somebody in a classroom with kids, whether it's on a permanent or a part-time basis, that's all you got to do. It's real simple. We have to do that in every other aspect of our life where we find a job. But if Chicago Public Schools and also other schools throughout the state of Illinois feel that what they're doing is proper due diligence on people that are employing, they clearly are not. So all I can say is that this is a matter for schools to be able to get their arms around and ensure that this is not going to be a situation that we have to deal with. All of us are parents. We have kids. I have a daughter. It's in high school. And the last thing, you know, my God, it's the worst nightmare you can have is thinking that your child is being abused by somebody at school. This is a message that has to be delivered throughout the state of Illinois. It's just not unique to Chicago, but Chicago will pay for it, and we know where that's going to come from.
Okay, thank you. Recently, the Supreme Court issued, U.S. Supreme Court, a significant decision regarding the Internet and that, and certain monies that will come to the state of Illinois as well as the other states. How do you think this money will be used?
Well, it's being used right now. Part of the budget that we had signed, like every other budget. It's based on conditions that would happen down the road. So when the Wayfair decision was pending, one of my members, my budgeteer, Tom Demmer, who's not here, who's a fantastic, fantastic guy, came up with the idea is that we think that the Wayfair decision, which would reverse the Quilt decision, which would state that states would now be able to tax these online sales, even though you don't have bricks and mortar in the state from that purchase. We anticipated that ruling was going to probably go in our direction. We were criticized for it at the table and also by other people. But that legislation came through. I mean, the legislation was part of the budget, and the Supreme Court just recently ruled that that's an acceptable and allowable practice for the state of Illinois and every other state. So that was a $300 assumption that we had baked into the budget, and it's going to go towards every expense that we have placed in there, Pete. But if the Supreme Court would have gone in a different direction, because that was a 5-4 decision, that would have been an oops moment, and we would have had to find another way to fill in that hole. But even with that being said, it's based on other assumptions that we have to take up. We have a pension buyout plan that's in the budget, which was from Representative Mark Batnick and Mike Fortner, Republicans. Good ideas, which I'm not sure what the actuarial value will be, but you know, it's anywhere. Some people have suggested it's only a $50 million, but we had an actuary who said it's almost $300 million. So there's a big difference. So budgets are plans. Budgets are our programs that must be maintained and have to be tended to during the course of a year. Even though we have a budget, our work isn't done. And I've told that time and time again. But you guys know that in the business world, that your budget is a plan that has to be adjusted accordingly during the course of a year. And that's what we're doing, but we actually have one. So the money's going to be well spent. We need to do more. We have to be able to go back in. And I'm hopeful that we can do it in November, or if we have that, what they call a lame duck session, that we address our backlog of bills. And that has to be the next priority with our property tax relief. But that's a good question, Pete. But I'm very fortunate, and we're very lucky that the Supreme Court did come down on behalf of the retailers in the state of Illinois who've been losing ground significantly. And this, I think, is going to balance the playing field.
Okay. I think we have time for one last question. This is from Pete also with the DuPage County Board and the Illinois State Autism Task Force. With all of the surrounding states, Indiana, Iowa, Wisconsin, with autism parity for Medicaid, do you see the possibility of this? Maybe you understand the question.
I think I understand the question. Okay. And Pete, thank you for your commitment to this, and thank you for bringing your daughter. Because I remember when you advocated on behalf of that legislation years ago. Everything we do, we want to be able to do everything. I'd like to be able to cover every infliction, but I also need to be cognizant of, do we have the money to pay for it? So I have to balance what is the right thing to do. And we have these gut-wrenching situations in Springfield, and I have people come into my office on a regular basis, and they talk about something that has not been included on their insurance plan or is not covered by Medicaid, and it deals with either their health or a loved one's health, and it's a very, very sensitive, emotional moment. I have to be honest with those individuals about where we're at in the state of Illinois with our finances and whether we can find a way to fund this type of coverage. So, Pete, I will just say that we're making progress with the state. I wish we can do more, that we do have parity with the other states, but it'll come down to whether or not we will have the ability to pay for it, because we have run too much on deficit spending, which has caused us to have this billions and billions of dollars of backlog on bills. And that's not right, because we have a number of people in here who rely on the state to pay, but they have bills that have been sitting around for years. And we have to take care of those services. So, again, this is a challenge, something that we wish we can do more of. But right now, until we have the money to be able to say that we can fund this program, it's not fair to lead people on and say that we are going to pass a law that's going to say that this coverage will occur, but there's no money to pay for it. So thank you.
Okay, and thank you. Let's give Jim a big hand. Thank you so much.